Very good. It's now 8 o'clock. So time for the chanting. Why not? Why do we always have to do things the same way, the same order, the same time? And sometimes that does sometimes get you into a rut. And when you get into a rut, you're just going through the normal way of doing things. And what happens is that you get a little bit bored. And that little boredom, because it's not really challenging your awareness. When you do something new, interesting, you find out it does sort of challenge your awareness. You have to be more aware and more alert. Which is one of the reasons why it's good sometimes to do something differently, especially if you're here on a long retreat, then to sometimes do things slightly differently. If you get very tired and sloth and torpor, honestly, one of the lovely ways of overcoming that is instead of sitting the same way, facing me or facing the Buddha, turn around, face the other way. It's strange. It's not disrespectful. It is actually becoming more alert, more aware of what's going on. And that's one reason why I said the other day of learning how to do backwards breath meditation or some of the other interesting ways of meditating. All it does, it creates that greater interest inside of you. I've often noticed whenever there is like any person in a great deal of stress, either physical stress, pain, sickness or something, it's weird, but it's almost like we have to do something. And because you have to do something, because you're in a bit of turmoil, sometimes you can look at all sorts of different ways, and this time you do it actually innovatively, and the meditation is nice and easy, and you get quite deep. Many times in my life, I've had to use meditation when you're in bits of trouble. For example, just already mentioned to you that time when I had scrub typhus, I could nevertheless go right inside and just get really peaceful. And honestly, just what a wonderful thing that was to be able to experience. When you felt like 3 or 4 weeks of fever, no energy at all, no one knew what was going on, and you know, you just go into a deep meditation and wham bam, you're just having a wonderful time again. All the time when I teach this to those people who have kids or teach the kids themselves about how to do the Year 12 exams, because that's what I did when I was a student at Cambridge. And I mean, it was supposed to be high stress. And of course, I did believe people in those days. You know, only 20 years of age when I did my final exams at Cambridge, and of course, you didn't really believe yourself too much. You know, you took on board everything which everybody else told you to do. And so when they said you had to study hard, I did. But then I realized that's not how you did well. How you did well was just learning how to the midday session for lunch. Supposed to have lunch. And it was a crazy time. And honestly, there was this weird 3-hour exam in the morning, 3-hour exam in the afternoon, hour of break in between. There's finals in theoretical physics. So you have like quantum mechanics in the morning for 3 hours, then astrophysics of the galaxy in the afternoon for 3 hours, and then fundamental particle physics in the next morning for 3 hours. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday in a row. That's really tough. But because I knew how to meditate. It's honestly, it really worked. It's one of the first times you realize the power of this meditation in ordinary life. So what happened was just you're meditating there. At lunchtime, I didn't have any lunch. Had breakfast and evening meal, layperson. And then I meditated in between the exams. And it was great because it made it very clear that how meditation works. You sat down and the first thing you realized was just how you were just obsessed with the past. It's amazing how people are obsessed with things. You don't have to be. It's crazy Why would you have to think about the early morning exam when it doesn't matter if you did well, you did badly, it can't be changed now. The exam papers are in, finished. So why do people still think about that? It's just crazy stuff. So for me, because I trained a little bit, I could let go of the morning exam, just really easy. And then the afternoon exam came up in my head. Should I go and do some more study? Maybe half an hour. Maybe I'll be lucky. What I look up maybe come up in the afternoon exam. Never ever did. But nevertheless, I was wise enough to say, look, I knew what I really needed to do well in the afternoon, was to be peaceful now. It was so clear to me. You don't have to be sort of really, really that intelligent, because you knew that your brain was tired. You needed some rest. You need to re-energize yourself. That's always the reason why that when I was at school in the mornings, we'd always have playtime. And playtime at lunch. Playtime in the afternoon. And holidays as well. And because it was well known in educational psychology, your brain can only absorb so much and work so hard, and then it gets really exhausted. Once it gets exhausted, you can't do anything. Which is one of the reasons why. And also, when it gets exhausted, you also get critical and grumpy, and you start criticizing others. Isn't that the case? You work too hard and you're really tired. Get out of my way. What do you know? Out of here. I'm supposed to be meditating. That shows me you're really, really tired. So if anyone's angry or upset like that, you always send them to the restroom. Your bedroom, have a rest for goodness sake. And you come out much happier. And after that, just so let go of the afternoon exam. Let go of the future. I've got to prepare myself for the future. And the best way is being here now. You know, the energy comes back and you get some innovative ideas. And that's, honestly, that's some of my talks maybe you might not like, you've heard them before, they just don't hit the spot, but a lot of them do. People still keep coming to these talks. And I don't plan them at all. I just sit down here and see what comes up. And because you don't plan at all, actually, it's not quite true. I do plan. The way I plan my talks is to prepare myself beforehand by doing nothing. By resting the mind, getting the energy coming back. Because once you have a good energy, it's easy to give talks. And it's also, I've told this to the other monks, and also sharing this with the nuns as well. Oh, you have turned around. Well done. It's nice to do like that. I totally approve. And but maybe some of you, maybe the young, fit ones, maybe the next time we give a talk, you can stand on your head. I'm coming, it's okay to laugh. You can see some of the nuns, they're trying to smile, trying to suppress it. But anyway. The point is, just doing something different. It just wakes you up and gets rid of sloth and torpor. And number two is that after, you know, getting rid of the past and the future, it just wasn't meditating, it wasn't a retreat, it was an exam. So the next thing you do is go into the what's happening now. You know, I always remember this, it's really shocked me. I've written about this, given lots of talks about this, but I was actually shaking physically. I was nervous. You know, we've all got our idea of who we are, or who we're supposed to be, or what we're supposed to live up to by other people's expectations. And that's the last thing I ever thought, that I was so nervous and just shaking. But because I wasn't looking in the past or the future and I was right here, you couldn't miss it. Body was shaking, it's high stress, obvious. So because of that, you know, I could actually watch the body. And just you learn how to feel it. And when you feel it, you get to know it. When you get to know it, it's amazing what you can do with your own body. You can relax it to the max. You know, I don't know if they have this these days, but I remember when I used to watch the television 48 years ago, That was when I was still a lay person. And it must have been earlier than that. But they had this weird guy. He was like a bodybuilder, you know, really lots of muscles all over him. And he just had his shorts on. And in his tummy, and they had some music on. He could move the muscles in his tummy along with the music. And just move this muscle and that muscle. And it was actually really gross. But you know, being Ajahn Brahm, I liked it. So I watched it. And my mother and father, oh, this is terrible. Oh, look at this. But one thing, I always remember that how could he move those muscles? Muscles which, you know, you can't move. I can't move. They're there, but the training of that, how do you train yourself to move muscles which no one else can? And how you do that is you just start to notice the muscles there. Be mindful of them, first of all. And once you're mindful of them, then try this, try that, and see what works to move it. Because when you're mindful, you get feedback. In other words, you do something, what works? Nothing works, okay, that's negative feedback. You move something else, it actually works, it's moved. So you learn from that just how to move those muscles. And after a while, you can do all these stupid things with your muscles and earn a living. Just because simple mindfulness. But also on that, there was one of the monks years and years and years ago, and he had a bad back. You know, it's just, it's not all monks and nuns have bad backs. But then, you know, that some years ago, I sort of, what would be the ideal monk? If you could magic one up. You know, so it's good for the lay people, it's good for the community of other monks. What would be the ideal monk or nun to, say, be in Dhammasala Monastery? And then I thought, they have to be, you know, strong, have to be a very good worker, have to be able to be a plumber, and a builder, and a bricklayer, and all these other works. Forget about IT, because there's so many people do that. Honestly, there is. And it still all goes wrong. Well, someone who can fix the toilets, oh, that's really valuable. It's true. Then what else? Oh yeah, and somebody who can eat anything. So whatever food you give them, Sri Lankan food, Thai food, Western food, Indonesian food, I don't know, any old food. And they've got this incredible diet, stomach, so they never get sick from eating food. And they also have to have a large capacity. As honestly, they have to be fat. You know why? Because actually people love giving you food. It's true, you know, you come and give me stuff. So this is really nice, can I have this? And I've already got far too much. And someone else goes, I must have some of this. I see that whenever you go around a buffet, it's people always watching you. It's really nice, this one. It's true. So someone who's really fat and can get so much food inside of them without getting sick. And people love that. Monks who are serious at the right time can give good talks, but also people who can be make you laugh as well. Because look, the world is a very hard place. Sometimes really disappointing. And sometimes, you know, if I crack jokes about one of the ladies went into the hospital today, and I said, you don't need to go to the hospital. I told this to Leha a few minutes ago. Just, you know, stay here. Because, you know, as I said last night, we've got all these great nurses and doctors here, as also we've got our funeral director, so we can actually... And yesterday was great, because yesterday we had the backhoe man in. You know, the big digger. So, very easy to put a grave there somewhere. And we've got lawyers here, and lawyers can make sure that it can't be sued afterwards. It's so convenient. Just get it done. So, sometimes people think that's black humour, it's really gross. But a lot of the time, if you can tell those sorts of jokes and lift people up, Because the happiness and the laughter is great for your physical health. As you all know, laughter is, been said for a long time, being one of the best medicines. Oh, I still remember this poor old lady. No, she wasn't old, she was middle-aged. And she'd been healthy for much of her life. And then eventually she had a hysterectomy. And she, you know, I'm a guy, so I don't know how hysterectomies affect you as a woman, but for her it was a really big deal. And so she said, I really need to talk to you. Can you come into the hospital for a chat? So I went into the hospital, and as soon as I came in, apparently she didn't show me anything, of course, but she just said she had this big scar, incision in her chest somewhere. And she said, please, please, Ajahn Brahm, no jokes. And honestly, I just could not refuse to tell jokes. I tried to tell soft ones and warn her. Maybe it hurt a little bit, but also just gave her a boost as well, a boost of happiness and so on. I think it all worked out in the end. So that was great. But anyway, that sometimes to be able to lift someone's spirits up is great. Because otherwise, when we do think, how many of us think negatively? Because we think negatively, oh, someone coughs. You were coughing this morning. Yeah, it's COVID. It could be. And sometimes a lot of times people like to worry. It's really weird, the human nature, that when you don't have something to worry about, then we watch all these TV soap operas. There was this, it was a soap opera, when I still watched TV 50 years ago, called, in England, The Coronation Street. And that was ridiculous. I thought, oh yeah, it's just a bit of entertainment. But later on, when I was a monk, I was reading, I think it was a Time magazine, and they said there was one of those episodes there, in that sort of, everyone knew it was just a drama, actors playing it, but they had some miscarriage of justice in the program. And everybody wrote to their MPs in the real parliament. Yeah, and the real parliament, in Westminster, it was their laws. If so many people actually sent in a letter to complain about anything, they had to have a debate upon it. So, honestly, this British parliament, instead of debating important things, like wars and economies and stuff, they were debating about Coronation Street. And I thought, why do people want to do that anyway? Why do people want to watch that? Is it Korean TV? Is it Korean soap operas?
Yes.
Yeah. And people watch that even though they can't understand the language. Well, and a lot of time it is because people are afraid of stillness and peace. So they always want something to disturb themselves. We love drama. I'm not talking what you see on the TV or see on the theatre. You're just making drama for yourself or for others. I've seen that very often. I think it's not done intentionally, but subconscious intention. Life is very boring, let's make something happen. And be careful of that, because when we get into meditation, then actually we change. We start to value peace, value harmony, value stillness as one of the most important things in the whole world. And trying to fix up, say, inequality, fix up the environment, fix up all sorts of stuff. Instead we sit down peacefully, quietly. You wouldn't believe just how powerful that is. It's the ability to leave things alone. not make them worse, and allow them to heal. I often notice that with sicknesses in the body. You know, if you have sort of a wound on your body, a cut or something, what do? You know, you sort of disinfect it, clean it up, make sure it's okay, and then put a bandage on it and leave it alone. Imagine you put a bandage on there and then it says, how is it? Oh yeah, not very good. I mean, how is it? 1 minute later. Oh yeah, you know, maybe there's the wrong ointment on there. I'll take that off and try this other one. And you put the band-aid back on. Then you get on the internet and say, that's the wrong ointment. You've got this other ointment which is much better. We never give things a chance to grow, a chance to heal. Never give yourself a chance to get deep meditation. Always interfering. Is this the right way? Should I do something differently? And you can see where that all comes from. And a lot of times for people, we always take it into the negative way. And this is the main part of the talk, I suppose, will be about more problems in meditation. And it's that thinking, obsessive thinking, and compulsive thinking. And there's, if you feel an itch in your body, oh look, this is the story which illustrates this. True story, honest about this. That I was in meditating in the jungle in Thailand. I was adventurous enough, he knew it, he weren't that sort of dangerous. But sometimes you get your mosquito net umbrella and you'd be out there in the middle of nowhere, in the jungle. It's very calm at night and people would leave you alone. The place I really liked going was actually for, this is what Ajahn Chah told me, because lay people will come to you if you're staying in the jungle, you know, someone will find you. And they did this once. I remember meditating in the jungle and this lady came and she offered me three things. And she didn't speak, I could understand Thai and Lao, but she thought I couldn't. So she just offered three things in front of me. A bottle of Pepsi, a piece of paper, and a pencil. Because I'd been in Thailand long enough, I knew what that meant. The bottle of Pepsi was a bribe, and a piece of paper and pencil were for the lottery numbers. That was true. I said, I don't give lottery numbers, and she took the Pepsi away. But anyhow, so Ajahn Chah would always tell us, if you really want some solitude, he said, go to they call it the Bachar, the cemetery where they burnt the bodies. He said, that was really good, because no one would ever disturb you there. I said, what about the ghosts? Ah, they'll never disturb you. So anyway, but I remember just trying to find these calm, quiet places, and there was no light in the jungles. So I was sitting down there one evening. And at first you have all the cicadas and other little animals and insects, they make all the noise. That's why these forests in Australia just, please excuse me, but they're so much better in the quietness here. And sometimes you go out there into the forest and it's just, it's gloriously quiet. I just really appreciate it. And it's just, oh, this is brilliant. Just you can't hear anything. It's so still and silent. It calms you down. It has to. You have to soak in some of the peace which you're feeling while you're hearing outside. So anyway, I was sitting there waiting for the cicadas and all the other animals to calm down. They did. It was really peaceful. Started watching my breath. So nice. And then you started hearing one of the jungle animals walking towards you. And of course, you know, you don't open your eyes. It's a waste of time opening your eyes. You can't see anything anyway. But I just started to listen. What was this? And as I was listening, I mean, it's only a small animal, not a danger at all. So I just left it alone and just, you know, focused on my breath again, nice and peaceful and quiet. But then a minute or two later, it had come closer. And then when I heard it this next time, it was obviously much bigger than I thought. Because in the jungle, you've got all the leaves and the twigs and stuff. And you can hear it sort of breaking these twigs and rustling the leaves. And I realized it was a reasonably average-sized animal, maybe like a mouse deer or a small, what else would it be, I forget now. But it wasn't that of a problem. So it was like a civet cat, maybe. Always remember the civet cat story. I'm just going off on a tangent again. Because a civet cat, there's always these civet cats, like little possums, that's all they really are, over in the forest in Thailand. But this one day in the Nanachat temple, that day there was a funeral. It was on the full moon day. And so, we did the funeral, no problem at all, never any problems. But then what happened afterwards was we had his little novice staying with us. He's only about 12. And this poor little novice, when he heard there was a funeral, a cremation right there in that monastery that day, we'd usually stay in the hall all night to meditate. And of course, he's only a 12-year-old or something, so he'd always sort of sneak back as soon as he could. We all knew he was going, just going to take a rest. Fair enough, he's only young. But this day, he was too scared to go out of the hall. It was just the jungle, the forest, and whatever lived in that forest. And so he stayed inside as long as he could, until his bladder was bursting. It was really a struggle for him, go to the toilet, or sort of stay inside and be safe. So he couldn't stand it any longer. He had to go to the toilet. The toilet was just maybe 20 metres away from the hall, maybe not that much. 20 metres, I think, about right. Now, the squat toilets, the Asian type. So as soon as he could, he made a sprint for the toilets. He ran there. He got inside there in time and just closed the door, locked it, and so did his stuff. And after he was squatting down on the toilet, that's when he heard. How can it sound? Someone was scratching on the door. It was too low to be not one of the monks. If they wanted anything, they'd just shout out or they'd knock on the door. This was scratching. And that poor little novice stayed in that toilet all night. And when the sun rose, it was only a tiny toilet cubicle, when the sun rose and it was light outside, only then he came out. And then he told us, I was almost attacked by the ghost. I was not imagining this, it was real. I was sitting in there and something was scratching outside and I was so terrified, I stayed in. Oh, you silly novice. That was a civet cat. Remember these squat toilet, so there's always water in the bottom there. That is where the civet cat would go every night to get some water to drink. All that civet cat was doing was just scratching at the door. Please let me in. Please may I have some water. He was perfectly safe. We've seen that many times, but this is one of the problems. Sometimes we exaggerate. We think, and the small things becomes a huge thing. So back to my story. In the jungle there, and there was a medium-sized animal, but still safe. And then as I was listening more quietly, and paying attention, as it came closer, it was coming right towards me. And I realized I'd totally misjudged this. This was a big animal. There's many big animals in those jungles. There were the elephants. The elephants, quite big, so you can outrun those or just avoid them. But there's bears. The bears are very dangerous. But there are also the tigers as well. And I thought that was a tiger. That's what it sounded like. And so I got concerned. So I came out of my meditation, opened my eyes, and I got a flashlight and shined it, looking for the tiger. Eventually I saw it. It was this mouse about that size. That's all it was, just a little mouse. But because of fear, I'd exaggerated the size and the danger of that mouse to being huge, to being a monk-eating tiger. You wouldn't get very much because I was really thin in those days. But nevertheless, it was a wonderful lesson to me in just how fear creates thoughts, and the thoughts manufacture something far bigger than what you actually, what's existing. To be able to see that and verify that, from that time on, I always make sure you don't get indulge and amplify existence with your thoughts. It's not that important. It's only Coronation Street. It's not a big deal. It's not the end of the world. But a lot of people want to see the end of the world. It's exciting, gives them something to do. But anyway, that taught me a lesson. And it's the same in your meditation. Shh, be quiet. And just when you don't have fear or excitement, you don't amplify any dangers. And when you don't amplify any dangers, you find that life is far more peaceful and productive. Even on one occasion too, which story should I tell? The one about when Ajahn Chah first went to overseas. He went to England. And of course, you know, he was with a couple of Western monks there. And going over there to have a visit. And apparently, on Thai Airways, they had landing problems, an emergency. The landing gear would not go down. And Ajahn Chah was on that aircraft. And apparently they put even the foam on the runway in case there was any sort of real danger and a fire or something. And everybody saw that, you know, through the window. And a lot of them came up to Ajahn Chah, "Please, Ajahn Chah, please, Ajahn Chah, please do your thing. Keep the aircraft safe for us, you know, please do some charting or something." And they all were looking at him when they were landing and just, you know, asking him for favours and something, "Oh, please, please, please." But then, just at the last minute, they managed to get the landing gear down, and so it was just an ordinary safe landing. And then everybody got their stuff and went out. And Ajahn Chah turned around to the monks with him and said, "Look, see all the people there? When they were in trouble, they were looking at the monks. Now they're out of trouble, they're looking at the pretty air hostesses." And there's so much truth in that. That's what we're here for. So sometimes people's reactions, you know, it doesn't matter what happens. Oh, okay, I'll tell my story as well about fear. This particular time also, that there was in the northeast of Thailand is really poor, and I love that place because people are really down to earth and they're just easy to talk to. But anyway, this time there were a whole lot of buses. Now, the buses were taken from town to town, caught fire because they were not really well maintained. And even one of the monks I knew, he had to evacuate the bus, and the driver stopped the bus very quickly, everyone out, and the bus burst into flames. He lost his arms bowl. And so I didn't read newspapers at that time, so I didn't know what was going on. But I was in one of these buses in the northeast of Thailand, and but because you're a monk, they always put you in the front seat. You've got the driver's seat, but then you're in the front seat, almost next to the window. You know why they do that? To prevent head-on collisions. Because they think the monks have got lots of good karma. So our good karma, by putting us up in the front, will stop head-on collisions. And they did that, and it was crazy stuff. There's one guy, or somebody, ran about stories. One of these guys, as soon as I got on this bus from Chonburi up into Bangkok, you know, he smiled as he stopped the bus. He didn't want any payment. He said, "No, come on the front." So I went on the front, you know, almost right next to the front window. And as soon as he started, it's a busy highway. And they had a TV in the front there, especially for the passengers. But it was so interesting. He was driving the car. And it was my job to prevent crashes. That's why I didn't take any fare. That was really scary. But, you know, he was much wiser than I was, that bus driver, because it worked. And that was so common in Thailand. You know, always putting the monks in the front to stop head-on collisions. I tried that once on Thai Airways, I think going from Bangkok to, I think it was to London. And I said, you know, I'm a monk, and, you know, because of what you do with monks in Thailand, you always put them in the front to create, to prevent head-on collisions and accidents. I'm only flying economy class, but... It was worth a try, it never worked. But anyhow. But one of those stories, and this is about your meditation, I'll get back on meditation, just the way we have negativity if we think too much. And if we allow any negativity to come in, it just actually grows and affects our mind, and we're afraid of everything. We're paranoid. Or we're just negative, it's not going to work, I can't do it. I'm hopeless. How can anyone like me get meditation? Or how can I sort of survive? And that was a wonderful time that Ajahn Chah was building his main hall in Wat Bopong. And of course, you always want to help out whichever, however much you can. So as a monk, you know, you can't, haven't got, not got any money to give anyone, because you can give your labor. So we're working really hard. And especially when it came to the time that Ajahn Chah had finished the main part of the building, had all this earth left over. Big mound of earth. Now normally you just get a bulldozer to just remove that earth. But that's one of the reasons why I'm sure he did this on purpose. To teach Dhamma in a very powerful way. Not just by words, but by actions. So anyway, he asked us, do you mind sort of moving the earth? And you can see it over there, and it needs to be moved over the back, and he showed us where it needs to be moved. There's a lot of earth, and just by shovels and wheelbarrows, that's all. And so in those days again, only one meal a day, finished about 9, 9:30, and then to work with the wheelbarrows all day until you couldn't basically see anymore, until about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the evening. Really hard work. You stop every now and again for the bribe, the Pepsi, cola, give yourself a bit of energy. But then, this is really hard work. But like I, like many others, you know, that you did, many of you apparently signed up for the chores to help out in this place. It's wonderful you do that. You feel you've taken some, so you need to give to others. So you help out with the cleaning and the mopping and whatever else it is. And that's how I felt. This is my teacher. It needs to be done. He had a point. So he worked for three long days moving that earth. And at the end of that, because he didn't have much time, didn't have any, there's no showers or anything, you just got water and threw it over yourself. But it was a bit late at night to do that, so a lot of times in the evening you just went back to your room and just, you crashed out, literally. And you still had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning for the morning meetings, so it was really hard physically. I was young and had a lot of faith. And we finished it. And the night we finished it, Ajahn Chah went off to another monastery to visit. And the following morning, the second monk, his name was Ajahn Liam. And Ajahn Liam, so after breakfast, he said, you know, I've been looking at that pile of earth. I really think it's in the wrong place. I really think it should be moved. He had a point. So I thought, okay, fair enough. Of course, the head monks don't do any moving of the earth. They just decide where it's supposed to go. We're the ones who had to push the wheelbarrows. And it was really hard work. And I was really tired. And I was really dirty and really stinky. And that just encourages more mosquitoes to come and bite you to death. All those mosquitoes were having a wonderful time. You're pushing the wheelbarrows full of earth, being bitten by mosquitoes in the hot jungle sun. Oh, it was just really torture. But it's my way of giving my dana. So we finished it 6 days, continual work. I must have stunk. But when we finished it, I thought, ah, tomorrow, free day, I can sort of have a rest after lunch, and then I can just wash my robes, wash myself as well, and do some meditation. I thought meditation was sitting cross-legged. It is really, but there's more to it than that. And then that evening, after 6 days, Ajahn Chah came back. And after breakfast, he said, "Why did you put the earth over there? I told you to put it over here. Move it." And that's when I lost my faith. Your faith's only got to last so long. I said, "What's he doing?" Now they should decide for themselves where they want that earth. And now, meaning I've got to work another 3 days, stinky, tired, no meditation. Oh, this is just too much. And so you started feeling rebellious. Started thinking of starting a union. That's why, for those who don't know, the many times the Anagarikas, the people in white, I'm just making sure there's none here right now, they started the ALF many years ago. The ALF was the Anagarika Liberation Front. Have you got one of those at Dhammasara? You don't know, do you? Wait and see. And of course, I was upset and angry. This is the best part of the story. You may have heard it before, but it's a beautiful one. And you also apply it to your meditation. I was upset. And I was swearing. In English. So the Thais could understand me. But of course they could. You don't need to sort of look at the words. Look at the body language. And there's one beautiful monk. I can't forget his name, but if he came up to me right now, I'd bow 3 times to him and say thank you. It wasn't Ajahn Chah, Ajahn Lim, it was just one of the other monks. He came up and said, "Brahm, pushing the wheelbarrow is the easy part. Thinking about it is the hard part." Oh my goodness. I remember those words, and I just, whatever I do in life, whether it's meditating, whether it's teaching, whether it's not sleeping at night, whether it's talking to people, whether it's ordaining bhikkhunis, or whatever you have to do in life, thinking about it is the hard part. Doing it is really easy. Even eventually when you get sick and die. Honestly, dying is really easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. That's what? I'm not me. Oh, dying, yeah, you've done it many times. Just next time you do it, get it right. But the thinking about it, that is the problem always. Same as meditation, people sometimes come up and say, "Oh, I can't meditate. I'm afraid to meditate," or "I haven't got time to meditate, it hurts to meditate." Or, stop thinking about it, just cross your legs and do it. "But I can't get jhanas." "Oh, no jhanas." There was this novice monk, one of the other, not the same one, but another novice monk. And it shows actually what the meditation is, what the obstacles are, and how to overcome them. And Ajahn Chah was giving a talk, one of his talks, in the evening. And when I mention this, hopefully you all know just how much I respect Ajahn Chah. I just said the other day, my idea, he was perfectly enlightened. I don't mind saying that. But sometimes he would give boring talks. Honestly, sometimes his talks were incredible and amazing, and so inspiring, but sometimes he was, didn't hit the right notes, and it was boring. This was one of those boring talks. It wasn't just for 1 hour. Go on and on and on and on. And you weren't allowed to leave. So it's one of these boring talks going on and on and on and on and on. It's okay for us monks because we're used to it. But with this little novice, after about 30 or 40 minutes, he started to think, when is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is he going to stop? And it became like a compulsive thought going on in his head. When is he going to stop? When is he going to stop? He was saying this to himself about half an hour. When is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is he going to stop? And then you have what we call the moments of insight. This is actually how powerful they are. Then he turned it around. Instead of when is Ajahn Chah going to stop, just the one thought came up. When am I going to stop? And he stopped. And when he stopped, the next time he opened his eyes, it was the morning time. The monks had gone off on arms round and left him there. The talk had finished about 5 or 6 hours ago. With everybody just doing their bowing and the chanting to end the talk, he just carried on meditating. He couldn't help himself. He was so peaceful, so still. He stopped his thinking and became really peaceful and still. It was the first time he got into one of the jhanas, a little 12-year-old. It's such a lovely story. It showed how easy it was for him. He just stopped. Let go, put things down. He didn't think too much about it. He did that because he had to. He was so so much suffering doing something. So those are the types of stories. Like, just learning how to stop, and even a 12-year-old novice can do that. Because he thought he had to. Had to really let go. And open his eyes in the morning. Of course, you're not hungry. You know, don't have any food. That's no food for that day, Mr. Armstrong. But still had a beautiful mind, and that was more than enough for him. So anyway, those are some of the things which happened. That's also one of the reasons why you can understand that Angulimala story, where the Buddha told him, stop Angulimala. Actually, you know, the Angulimala told the Buddha, stop, 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 because Angulimala was chasing him with a sword. And the Buddha said, I've already stopped, you stop. And Angulimala stopped. How could somebody, you know, with all that bad karma of killing people, become an enlightened being so quickly? Because the Buddha knew exactly how to teach him. Stop. Stop the thinking. Because if you think, how many of you just remember all the bad things you've done? Sometimes you remember the good things you've done too, but you also remember the bad things. There's just too many thoughts. Stop the whole lot. This beautiful enlightened being came out of that. So when you are meditating yourself, remember that. Tell yourself to stop. And don't just tell yourself, do it. Stop. Stop moving. Stop going out. Stop reaching out for anything. Stay where you are. Stop moving. Physically, emotionally, mentally. That's what happens. Stop. What happens next? Pretty good when you come out afterwards. And please don't worry if you miss your lunch. Leha, is it okay if people get into a jhana and miss their lunch? We can actually give them a meal later on. Yep. Tomorrow morning. When it's no, any old time. If you get a jhana, fair enough. Because we're just taking away the fee. You probably won't want anything anyway. Simply because you're just so happy. So, a lot of times, the thing which I'm talking about today was, I'm cranky, the fear, and how we create fear, how we magnify it. This is terrible. And it's also, we can magnify positive things as well, out of all proportions. But of the two, you can magnify the positive things much better. That's the best one to do. And that means you have the fear disappears, and you can stop. You don't have to compensate. You don't have to feed the mind anything. You don't have to decide to get a jhana. Yeah, that's what I really want now. Anyone want jhana for lunch? No, I don't want anything at all. these beautiful teachings of the freedom from desire. After a while, when you experience some of those states, you understand what you mean. And this desire is just always at you all the time, trying to get you to do this and trying to get you to that, convincing you by just the way we use our thoughts, you know, that this is really important and I've had enough, until someone says pushing the wheelbarrow is easy, thinking about it is the hard part. All the rest of the things which you do in life, which you make itself look really afraid. Instead of like that, it's nowhere near as unpleasant as you thought. So just let it be. Stop. Be still. You know, they even say that in the Bible, Christian Bible. I don't know where they got this from, but I remember just there's one saying somewhere, I think in Psalms somewhere. It says, "Be still and know that thou art God." I thought that's a pretty sort of weird thing to have in the Christian Bible. It's almost heretical. But it's got there somewhere, because some people knew how to meditate. Be still. Don't move. Stop. Stop still. Not just physically, mentally. And you find it's so easy. Thinking about it is hard. So please stop thinking about it. And be still, see what happens. They called it God because it's just so amazing, powerful, beautiful, strong. And then you can have a wonderful time. You know, sometimes you really feel that maybe we Buddhists, you know, we're just, especially great meditators and great nuns and great monks, sometimes, oh, it's just really unfair. Because if you get into a jhana as a Christian, then they'll name church after you. They'd name a hotel after you. They would a school after you. It would be St. Leha's School for Girls. It would be St. Peter's Academy for boys. No, I won't. I've got to be careful, I can easily get into trouble. But no, as Buddhists, but they used to have, actually, I don't mind saying this, they used to have this, you know, in the Christian church, they used to have saints' days, one every year, 365. And they've had so many saints around, that one of the saints' days, I forget what day it was, it should have been in May, but I think it was another time in October or something, it was Saint Jehoshaphat's day. And no Jehoshaphat. Why was he a saint? Oh, it was because Saint Jehoshaphat, before he was a saint, he saw an old man, a sick man, a dead man, and a holy man. And Jehoshaphat went to India and he converted so many people in India 2,500 years ago to being Catholics. And that was Saint Jehoshaphat. And it became one of the saints' days until they found out in the Vatican that Jehoshaphat, which is how they pronounce Bhagavat, and it was a Buddha. They did give away. Saint Jehoshaphat. The original document was found in Georgia in the Caucasus, in modern day, I think, Russia now. But anyway, it was interesting to see all that old history, that they could relate to that simply because it was somebody who was very enlightened, peaceful, through deep meditation. So don't be afraid of anything. And just don't think too much. Learn how to be peaceful and quiet. And the thinking is the biggest problem in your meditation, as you very well know. So shh. Don't be a great thinker. Be a great listener. And to listen, you can't be talking inside. Shh. You can't assume what you know. That's why some very wise person put on that board outside. Never allow your knowledge to stand in the way of truth. In other words, all your knowledge, all that you've learnt, all that other people have told you, that's an approximation. But you go there and you find it's good enough. But if you stop there, you never go deeper. All that knowledge of what you've been taught, what you expect, and then you can go really, really deep, way beyond what you already know. The truth. Yes, exactly. A great place to stop. Sadhu! 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 Thank you for listening. Okay. Another talk hits the dust. Stop. Okay, so interviews now for those who want interviews. And have a nice, peaceful time. And listen a lot. Especially to nature. Nature's great.